Here we go. All right, so we are Hilchos Mila here. We're in the middle of Reish Samachay. We began Sif Dalid at the end of last week and raised an interesting... this is not on the page. This is actually the page before. We had enough trouble uploading one page. I wasn't going to try to do a... I wouldn't try to do a what's it called, the second page. But here we go. But there is, the Shulchan Aruch makes this comment coming from the Torah. It's not in the Gemara. But it's a tshuva of the Gaonim where he said that a mamzer, even though he needs to get a bris mila, right, a technical mamzer, somebody who really comes from a illegitimate relationship, so he needs to get a bris, but we don't give him like the full brachos, and we don't request rachamim on his behalf, which is a little bit of somewhat difficult idea to grasp. But okay, the child should be on his own. So the explanation for that is, plus we're not really, a mamzer is really a problem to sort of have on our hands. So, all right, that's one issue. But then if we noticed last week, we're not on the page of the Shulchan Aruch itself right now, but on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Akiva Eiger commented that anytime there's a illegitimate child, that if the parents have some sort of union, the parents of the child have a union that is forbidden by the Torah, so then we make some kind of pronouncement at the bris. So, okay, that is, that's where Akiva. So I asked Rabbi Eisenman, who apparently is leaving earlier than scheduled. He told me he was supposed to leave Lag BaOmer, but his flight was canceled on Lag BaOmer to go back to Eretz Yisrael, so instead he's leaving like on Monday. So, all right. But I had a conversation with him this week where I asked him, have you ever been in charge of such a bris? So he said that these minhagim are not observed today, of either like making some kind of announcement, as the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, that we make sure, announce at the bris, make sure everybody should know that this child is a mamzer. But it is replaced by something else, that often moalim, now I don't recall getting any of these for any of my children, but moalim do have the practice of writing bris certificates that they give out to give out at the bris milas that they do, and on those certificates often he'll write any type of information that needs to be passed on to somebody else, and that perhaps is a practice that people do today. So therefore, if there is a child down the line, so what's the story with this child? So he said, well, I have this certificate from the Mila, so then that's something that could be passed on as some sort of information about what the status is of that child. So that is one. The other issue is that I remember once having an issue of parents that were... there was some sort of, I think it was, oh, actually this was the case of parents who were homosexual that were adopting a child. They're actually Israeli and they were here in Philadelphia. I remember approaching a mo'el, and who, they came, somehow they came to me asking me about information of a mo'el. And I asked someone who said, yeah, leave me out of it. So I was like wondering, like, what do we have the right to leave someone out? Like, what right does a mole have to say? You know what? Nah, I'm not going to take it on. But that was what he said. I remember asking Rav Schechter about it. He said, yeah, he's right. Mole did the right thing. You don't have to get involved in such cases. I was like, okay, but the child's gonna like one day, he's gonna be raised in a Jew, whatever. Yeah, it's okay. Let someone else worry about it. So I said, but that's even going to mean that the mole's probably gonna be some one of these people you find in a newspaper who offer to do milas. What exactly is the status of those people? He said, yeah, okay, it's not your problem. You don't necessarily have to be involved in every mila. So that's I don't know what the rules of that are, but it's sort of an interesting thing. Already in the Shulchan Aruch making a comment that, we don't necessarily have to be so... jumping to do every possible meal. It's sometimes the parents' issue. They have to figure out a way to deal with it. Okay, so anyway, so that's the first thing. Now, for some reason, well, you can kind of tell here why, because that's a tshuva of the Gaon. I think let's quote in the Baal Iter. And then the Baal Iter continues on and says the following halacha. So it's a little bit disjointed, but within the same halacha, that the Baal Itzer is making a comment on. So he continues on and says the following, which is the main topic of tonight's shiur, and that is, what about when you have a Mila that's going to take place on a fast day? So what do you do about the cup? What do you do about the cup? So it's not a little bit outside of the realm of Hilchos Mila, but what do you do about that cup at that baris? So this ends up being a interesting question. So the tour continues, and I'm not on the page that I sent out yet. It says, where you have this Mila Yom Tanis, Eshkan l'rabusa kamay de ka'amri mivarech al hakos, u'minog lahanicho ad motze yom hakipurim. And that's where I started on the tour, on the page that I sent to you. So it begins with the word Ad Motzei Yom HaKippurim. That the minhag is to make a bracha, it sounds like making a bracha in the morning on the cup, and leave that cup until Motzei Yom Kippur, Visho Sehu Imo Shel Tinok. And at that point, the mother of the Tinok, the mother of the child, will drink from that cup at that point. So that's a bit of an odd thing, right? You could think of a couple of problems with that, right? Number one, first of all, why isn't the mother drinking from it that day? So the mother is, within 8 days, generally what we call bishiyurim, that she's drinking, she's encouraged to eat or drink, but pachus mikashir, only less than the amount, and if you're drinking from the cup, so ideally that should be more than the shir. Is that your real background, Sam? Okay. Ideally, that should be more than this year. So that's number one. Second of all, once somebody's going to be drinking it, why specifically are you giving it to the mother? But third of all, the most obvious issue is, wait a second, you're making a bracha bor pi agafen at 11 o'clock in the morning, and now you're going to take a drink from it at 8 o'clock at night? Like, what in the world's going on there? So I'm not sure, even sure that that's what the itter means, but the tour continues on and says, "Vaharich harbi b'davar v'yotzi miklal dvar," and he expounds on this for a while, and he says, "Shabiyom hakipurim v'tishabav lo mevarchin klal akasa." Right, you don't make the bracha on the cup. V'avdinan kibeduchta d'leis be'chamra, and you'll just do it like, for example, when there is no wine around. And on the other fast days, you can make the bracha, and you could give it to the, it sounds like to the child, to the brist, to the child who just had his bris. So in the tour, what are the options that are presented? So number one is this, we call a pretty wild shita of making the bracha on the cup and then drinking from it 8 hours later. Second option is not to have a cup at all. And actually, that's the only two options that are mentioned in the tour. In the Beis Yosef, so the Beis Yosef then quotes the Baal Itter, that the Kolbo quotes, and he beats up on the Baal Itter, right? This is where the Beis Yosef begins here on the top of the page that I sent out, right? But Kama Tamim, for many reasons. Ha'echa, number one, She'ein manichin akos ad alayla shema yishbach. He says, first of all, you're going to leave the cup tonight, maybe it will spill, right? V'nimsa she'berach levatala, and it'll end up being that you made a bracha levatala. V'od, and not only that, She'ein lahafsik kolkach bin ha'bracha v'ta'ima, right? How could you pause so long between the bracha and the tasting of it? V'cheshayitom sarach levarach acharset. By the time you're going to come around and taste it, you have to make another bracha already. If you're making a second bracha, so then what does that mean about the first bracha? It was a bracha levatala. The gam harashba kasav came b'tshuva b'shem bal iter, etc. The gam Rav Avudram raises this issue, and therefore says not to make a bracha. And he said, and he quotes from the Rambam as well, that the Rambam also in a tshuva suggests, not in the Mishnah Torah itself, but in the tshuva said that you should not make a bracha. Okay, so the options so far are to make a bracha and wait. We have a problem with doing that. So rather, at this point, it's not to make the bracha at all. Continues on, and then we get into the Ashkenazi land. Mordechai besof perach b'chol ma'arvin. So then that brings us to the Mordechai at the end of perach b'chol ma'arvin. So what perach is b'chol ma'arvin found in? If you want to take a guess, so in Maseches Eruvin is the perach of b'chol ma'arvin, and there's a little bit of a discussion about making brachos al hakos. So the Mordechai there says kasu kedas rabusa kamai ukfar nismar shadvarim dechuyimim, and already it talks about the first opinion about making the bracha and holding the cup till later. However, v'tur arachayim Kasav Rabbeinu de Betisha Bav Yesh Om Shivarech Belokos. V'das HaTosfos Shivarech Alakos V'yitin L'tinok. And Tosfos there says you should make a bracha on the cup and give it to L'tinok, to the child or a child to drink. V'lo chayshinan, and we're not concerned dil ma'asi l'misrach, that perhaps it will stick. Why? Kivan de'eno devar keva, because it's not a permanent item. What is that talking about? So that you need to know what the Gemara Maseches Erevin is asking. There the Gemara is asking, how do you make a bracha of Shehechiyanu on Yom HaKippur? Right? Yom Kippur, how do you make a bracha of Shehechiyanu? Bracha of Shehechiyanu is traditionally done a la kos. Every other time we make Shehechiyanu, well, truth is, there's a question about lighting candles and light making a Shehechiyanu, but when us men make a Shehechiyanu, it's always done during Kiddush. So what do you do on Yom HaKippur? And the Gemara actually suggests, right, that Levarich HaLev of the Gemara in Mem Amud Beis in Maseches Erevin says, right, V'livrich HaLev V'lanchei, you can make a bracha and then put it down without drinking. Why? HaMavarich Tzarech Sheyitom, was the one making the bracha needs to taste it. So Gemara says, fine, Leisvei Lianuka, give it to a child. So Gemara says no. Leis hilcha sakrav acha. Why? Dilma asi lemisrach. Perhaps it might stick. Right? To get up on Kol Nidre night, right, and make a bracha shechianu v'kimanu yanos manazeh while holding a cup, and then we look for the 5-year-old or 8-year-old or 10-year-old. Right? Is going to show up. We're going to give him a cup of wine in front of the entire shul on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says no. Don't do that. Dilma asi lemisrach. Perhaps it will stick. It's sounding like the child will get used to this idea of a child drinking on Yom HaKippurim, that is inappropriate. Now, the child knows that he drinks on Yom Kippur. What's the big deal, right? So the Ritva the Ritva explains that it's one thing for the child to get up in the morning of Yom Kippur and go and get their own cereal and milk and eat it, or their ASCII food, etc. It's another thing for an adult to call the child over and say, "Nu, Maishala, come here, let me give you something to drink." So the Gemara suggests that is inappropriate. So comes Tosfos on that Gemara and says, "Omer Rabbeinu Shmuel, dafka gabizman." He says that only, however, is when it comes to Shehechiyanu. Why? Shehu kavua, because that is kavua, that happens every year. Chayshinan dilma asi lemisrach, because, right, that's going to stick, that's going to be a problem. I don't know what exactly is it. Maybe this kid will be the traditional grape juice drinker on Yom Kippur night, and he'll get to be older, and he'll continue to be, right, that's his kibud. We know how sensitive people are about kibudim on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So this kid's not going to want to give it up, and he'll continue drinking the kos, the wine from the Shehechiyanu. However, aval im ira bris mila b'tisha b'av o b'yom HaKippur, if a bris happens on Tisha B'av or Yom Kippur, d'lo have ela akrai b'alma, right? That doesn't happen. That only happens once in a while. So lo chayshin and dilma asi l'misrach, right? We're not concerned about that problem. It's going to stick. U'maisa haya b'chupa b'asar b'teves nasnu hakos l'tinok lishtos. And what happened? Once happened that there was a chupa on the 10th of Teves, and they gave a cup to a child to drink. Why in the world are they doing a wedding on Asar B'Teves? If I had to guess, Asar B'Teves fell out on Friday. Right, and we know that we've learned a couple of times that there was a minug of having wedding. Often that people would have weddings on Friday. In fact, up to this century, I believe Rav Moshe Feinstein himself got married on a Friday. It's written up in one of the volumes of Igros Moshe in the introduction. So they had the wedding on Asar B'Teves. Who's going to drink the wine? They're going to find a kid to drink the wine. In fact, there is a Tosos, there is a, like, addendum to this Tosos, like a bracket added onto this Tosos, where he says, "Umaisa hay bevrisimila b'rabinu Yaakov bar Yakar, shechal b'asara ba'av, b'echad b'shabbos." That once fell out, a bris fell out on the 10th of Av, on Sunday. Meaning what? That it was the fast day of Tisha B'Av that was being pushed off till Sunday. Right, v'hu aya av basin, and he was in charge. V'tziva lehispal mincha gedola v'rachtzu v'achlu mifnei sheyomtov shalein haya. And they actually waited till after Mincha, and they washed and they ate, because that was their yontif. As it says, Sosanuchi, right? Vahai de lo mevarchim and shechianu mishum tzar dinukin. By the way, it adds in this idea that we don't make a brach of shechianu at a bris, by the way, in case you were wondering, because the child is having tzar. I think we might have spoken about already that there's a machlokas about if it's the moel's first bris. Meaning for the child, we're not going to do what the child's experiencing pain. But maybe the father is, but if it's not the father's first bris, if it's the moel's first bris. Right, if it's the moel's first bris that he ever does, so maybe he should do a shachianu. That's a shaila out there. I think the minna generally is to do it. But anyways, we have a couple of interesting things coming out from this Tosus. The implication of Tosus, however, is for our purpose, for the thing that we're learning about with regards to the drinking of the wine, is that you should find a child to do it. The Gemara in Maseches Eruvin seems very concerned about children drinking wine on fast days, right? He says, no, that's only if it becomes an official part of the fast day. But if it's a bris is a rare thing, so we'll permit the child to drink the wine under those circumstances. Okay, so let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch itself. So Shulchan Aruch, we're in Simin Reish Samechei Sif Dalet. So we learned the first part last week. Mamzer b'Yisrael hu mevarchin olav birchas mila ad kares beris aval in mevakshin olav rachmim. That a mamzer will make the bracha of mila for it, but we will not request rachmim on his behalf. V'mefarsim b'shas milaso umefarsim b'shas milaso shehu mamzer. And we publicize at the time of mila that he is a mamzer. Fine. The Yom HaKippurim. Let me continue on. I mean, I would have thought that the Shulchan Aruch might want to break these sifim up, but okay. Continues on. On Yom Kippur, on the four fast days, lo yivarich alakos, right? That was the position of the Shulchan Aruch, right? And the position of the Rambam in his Tshuva, right? So that's the position of the Shulchan Aruch. Mihu, however, on the three fast days, begimel tzomos mehem, shayoledes enam misane, but if on the other fast days where the woman doesn't fast, and by the way, for us, that's all the other fast days. I'm not sure what he's... I'm sure it's Rebaz, Achadash. Not sure what... I guess Tanis Esther would be one of them. I'm not sure what the other three are. Truth is, not sure. Oh, okay. It's quoted from Simon. In Simon, if you look at Or Chaim Tavkuf Nundat, I feeling you'll find it. So then the woman herself could drink it. I don't know what our minig is. Generally, our minig is that women who are fasting or nursing don't fast other than Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. That's the general minig, at least. It's my Mesorah that we have for my Rebbeim. So I'm feeling they would drink under these circumstances as well, as long as they're present. Yachal levarich alakos, v'tidu menu hayoledes. So let the mother drink the wine, no problem. However, imhi shomas habra, if she hears the bracha, mischavenes shlo lahafsik bedvarim, and she has in mind that I'm not going to interrupt and I'll wait to get the wine. Bein shmiya habracha l'shtiyas hakos. Aval b'yom hakipurim, on Yom Kippur itself, uvetishabav, she'ein hayoledes yicholo lishtos, where the mother is not able to drink, ein mevarchan alakos, don't make the bracha, uvetishabav, Asanami lo maisina. This is an interesting point. On Tisha B'Av, says the Mechaber, you also don't bring out the hadasim. Now, we don't really have that minhag by us of having hadasim, but by Sephardic brisim, they do. I believe when Abu Krat did the bris in Shul a year ago, I think they brought out hadasim then also. The minhag to make, it's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, to have hadasim, to make the bracha bar minei besamim at a bris. So he said, on Tisha B'Av, don't do it. Why? Because we don't make the bracha of besamim on Motzi Shabbos when Tisha B'Av falls out the way. When Tisha B'Av falls out on Motzi Shabbos, so we make Havdalah on Motzi Shabbos. We say Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kol on Motzi Shabbos. We say Bar Mi'ori HaEish on Motzi Shabbos. And then we wait till we're going to break the fast, hopefully the end of Tisha B'Av, in order to do Havdalah Al HaKos. So what's missing? Besamim. We end up not making the bracha besamim that year. So why not? So it sounds like there is a problem with making a bracha besamim on Tisha B'Av. However, we don't find anywhere else that there's such a halacha, right? We don't prohibit a person making a bracha b'rimei besamim on Tisha B'Av. So what's going on there? So very quickly, the Shach comments on this. Kolomar, why don't we make a bracha besamim? Comments the Shach here, Yud Beis. Kolomar mitam she'in mevarchen al besam b'tisha b'av shachal yos b'motzei Shabbos. V'chamosh nispar b'arachayim, v'haynu d'reach tanukub, because it's a nice smell. V'hu adin hacha, so too here, the asur la'reach b'makam sh'noagim litol hadas, la'reach b'shas mila, k'di el sif aleph, zehu das ha'machaber. Aval, says the Shach, ain't a mukhrach, it doesn't fit. Right, the near the hasam, the reason over there, the reason motzi Shabbos, you don't make a bracha b'samim, haynu taimi shum shahaneshama yisera halacha motzi Shabbos, v'nitzkan brachas b'samim l'tanug l'hashiv nafsho. There's some kind of extra benefit that is being gained by smelling b'samim on motzi Shabbos. Right, but aval says the Shach she'asu b'chol tishvav la'reach b'samim zel lo shamanu. We don't find anywhere that there's a prohibition of smelling the samim on the rest of tishvav. So it always confuses me every year. But there is only like a special thing of not doing b'samim on Motzi Shabbos because of this neshama business. But other than that, there's no prohibition of the b'samim, and therefore by the bris suggests the Shach. There won't be a reason not to do the besamim if you were want to do it in the first place. Fine. So what's the opinion of the Machaber is no wine, no brachos, no problem. Right? That's the Machaber's position. Comes the Ramah and says, V'yeshorim demavarech akos b'chol tanios v'nosen habracha l'tinokos ketanim. He says, and some say, this is our Mordechai and our Tosfos, that you should make the bracha on the cup on all fast days and give it to children, v'chein pasakatur, right? V'chein noagin uv'yom haKippurim, probably out of deference to that Gemara, noagin litein latinok hanimol. Our minog is to give it to who? The brist kid, right? As if he's not suffering enough, right? We're going to give him a little bit more to drink. Maybe that's to alleviate his suffering. V'yishrom da'af belotainis yotzim b'zeh. You'd be yotzim by giving it to the child. Aval ein noagin kein. That's not our minog. El ha-sandik shoseh kish'enu tanis. When it's not a fast day, the sandik drinks it. Okay, so that opens up a whole bunch of things. All right, first of all, we don't usually have the sandik drinking it. What exactly is the Ramah talking about? Second of all, why is there a distinction between Yom Kippur and other fast days? It sounds like the Ramah is making some kind of distinction. On most fast days, we'll give it to a child. On Yom Kippur, we're going to give it only, it sounds like, to the rachanimel, to the child who just had his bris. And then the third overall question here is, what do you accomplish by giving wine to an 8-day-old child? Right? I understand in shul, so we'll make a bracha right every Friday night. So the person makes kiddush. What do they do with the wine? So ideally, you give it to a child, right? What are you accomplishing by giving it to the child? He says, well, there's a problem with the person making kiddush himself drinking it. Because it's ain't kiddush el b'makam suda, that's not going to be his makam suda. So therefore, you give it to a child. What's the child doing? Well, you're training the child in brachos, something like that. So therefore, we're going to give it to a child to drink. If the child's not there, so then the person who is making a kiddush could go ahead and drink. But that is assuming that there's some kind of chinuch aspect to giving it to the child, that you're demonstrating this is how you make a bracha, and then you go ahead and drink. What are you accomplishing by giving the baby giving the baby something to the wine to drink, right? The baby is not higil chinuch, certainly not in the state that he currently is in. So, bum, 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 where is it? Sorry. So a couple of years ago, I gave a shir in shul on I think it was between Mincha and Maariv on the Shabbos. Remember we used to have shirim during that time in shul. and spoke about one of my favorite anonymous halachic men. I'm actually trying to come up with more of them. I'd love to give a series entitled Anonymous Halachic Men of the Gemara. right? These people who we make entire sugyas about actions that they did, even though they don't necessarily realize it. So what was that story? I got to find the right. So the story goes that they're trying to figure out what one does for Kiddush Rabba, for the great Kiddush. And the Gemara tells us the story that one of the Amoraim, Rabba, I believe, I can't find that. Where is it? I'm just looking for where the underlines are in my Gemara. In my, no. I had it before. Here we go. So one of the Amoraim showed up in a town, and they say to him, I think it was Rava, we're hereby going to be mechabed you with Kedusha Rava during the day. And Rava says, gosh, I don't know what Kedusha Rava is. What's this? They want to add another bracha? What's going on here? So he says, makes a bracha, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Borei Pri Hagafen. And he sees out of the corner of his eye, this old guy all of a sudden starts bringing his cup up to drink. He says, aha, it must be that that's all we do. We only make the bracha bar priya gafed, and he drinks, and the Gemara comments, look how wise he is, chachamina v'roshah, he knew exactly what to do. So on that Gemara, the Rush writes that, the Rush makes a comment there, that you generally, the people sitting are not allowed to drink. If you're at a meal, and the person makes kiddush and distributes the wine to drink, you're not allowed to drink until the person making kiddush drinks, right? That's the halacha. Even if he distributes in one of those wine things that you pour into and distributes into the cup, right? You shouldn't drink until the person making kiddush drinks himself. He says, however, everybody has their own cup. Based on this Gemara, the Rush suggests that everybody is permitted to drink. He says, however, so why is that? Because if you have your own cup, it's like you made kiddush yourself. However, he asks the question that there is another implication, although we have an idea of drinking dalet kosos on the night of the Seder, that it could be that not everybody actually has to drink. That even though you have the cup there, maybe you won't go ahead and drink specifically on Seder night. So why would that be? That there would be a distinction between kiddush and the dalet kosos on Seder night. We assume that everybody needs to drink the four cups, but not all the Rishonim, I think, assume that. I think that's what the premise of the question is, just reading it quickly. His answer is, the Dvar Shmuel suggests that there's two different types of brachos al hakos, right? Bracha al hakos number one is what we're used to, that you make a bracha al hakos, and then you go ahead and drink the kos, right? Kiddush on Friday night is a bracha al hakos and where it is mandatory to drink what is in the kos, what is in the cup. On the flip side, there are other birchos al hakos where the cup is not actually something we are required to go ahead and drink from. What would those examples be? So any time that you make a bracha al hakos where the cup is only there to sort of raise up the bracha that you're making. So what are the examples of that? A wedding, a bris, as we're talking about, and potentially dalet kosos, right? That the four cups are actually perhaps there for another purpose, right? All of the four cups that we have on Seder night are combined with some other bracha going on. There's something else going on with all four of the cups. So it could be that the cup is only, in a way, ceremonial. Right, so then what do we do what is then the halacha with regards to those cups? So it could be technically you don't have to drink it. Why do we go ahead and drink it? So as like not to embarrass the cup, not to like kind of leave the cup hanging, so to speak. That's what the Dvar Shmuel suggests. If that is the case, so then we can understand why we accomplish by giving the cup to the child. right? You're giving the cup to the child not to sort of fulfill your bracha bar priya gafen, that you're making the bracha to drink something and you give it to an 8-day-old. No. The bracha bar priya gafen is not really, even if you don't end up drinking from it, it's not leaving the bracha hanging. It's not a bracha levatala. The bracha bar priya gafen is there to raise the level of whatever mitzvah you're doing, right? For that reason, it's not even mandatory to drink the cup. Not even mandatory to drink the cup. You only do it so it doesn't look bad. So that is A, why you could give it to the child, and perhaps that explains that sheet of the Bala Iter that we quoted all the way earlier, that you make the bracha al hakos, right? And the Bala Iter suggests on Yom Kippur morning, and then you leave it for the mother Yom Kippur night. And all you're showing, like, what in the world is he talking about? What's he doing with that? So perhaps based on this idea, you can understand what's going on there. You're not going to leave it to the night and not make a bracha on it. No, you'll make a bracha on it at night. But in terms of Birchas Hanenin issue. But it's not going to be a bracha levatel, the bracha during the day, because the wine will be drunk at some point. So that perhaps is what's going on here with regards to giving the wine to the child. Incidentally, I was at a wedding a little, two years ago, and as was wont to happen, there all of a sudden there's this big delay under the chuppah, right? The chassan and kala walk down after everybody's already been sitting there for 45 minutes, right? The chassan comes down, the kala comes down, and they pour the wine, and all of a sudden there's like this big delay, right? And you're sitting in the crowd like nobody has any idea what's going on. So the it was my cousin's wedding, my uncle Rabbi Rosenzweig, who spoke here a couple of years ago. Right, so he was the Masader Kedushin, he was the Masader Kedushin, and the chassan's rebbe, my cousin's rebbe, was Rabbi Rosenzweig from YU. So it was Rabbi Rosenzweig as the Masader Kedushin, Rosenzweig as the aide. And so my uncle, I asked my uncle, what was the story? What happened there later? So he said, it turns out, I think he didn't realize this, or he assumed it wouldn't be a problem, that the kala is allergic to wine. So he assumed it wasn't a problem, so she just won't drink. So I think under the chuppah, he mentioned this to Rav Rosenzweig, who said, what do you mean? You gotta have something for her to drink. She can't not drink. So therefore they had to go and scramble, and someone went and got some grape juice that she'd be able to, drink from. So I commented, like, I don't know, there's the Devar Shmuel in Avri Psachim that says that nobody really has to drink the wine. It's only kind of to make everyone feel better. He said, yeah, I don't know. Rosenzweig said, Rav Rosenzweig was a Rosh Shiva YU standing under the chuppah. You're not going to start arguing Devar Shmuel's with him. So I don't know. I never resolved that. It would seem to me that the idea of the chassan and kala both have to drink, that wouldn't be something that we would hold up a whole wedding for. But Rav Rosenzweig thought otherwise. So try to figure out one day, I'll try to find out what happened, what his thought process was. Lemaisa, by the way, the Aruch HaShulchan actually says that I looked it up in the Kovetz Halachos from Rishmuel, and he points out that the Aruch HaShulchan says that we don't do that. That we actually give the cup to a katan higiyah l'chinuch. That even though we make this whole big deal in the Ramah itself about giving it to a child, he says, no, the Aruch HaShulchan says, and I looked at the Aruch HaShulchan, kind of like shrugs his shoulders and says, I don't really understand what the big deal is, right? We paskin like Tosfos. Tosfos says you don't have to worry that the child is going to develop bad habits from drinking wine from brisas on Yom Kippur. And we give it to a child, you don't have to worry about it. And he suggests that in fact is the that actually is the minug. I was surprised that it wasn't brought in the Pesukim the Chuvos, but that is I think that's what actually, and he quotes for that Rav Yashiv suggests to do that as well. In the Pesukim the Chuvos here, he then goes on and quotes a couple of other sort of detail. He points out that brisim that fall out on particular days, fast days, Erev Pesach, Shabbos, right, that those halachos are not found in Hilchus Mila, but rather they're scattered out throughout the rest of Shulchan Aruch in their specific places. So, but he collects them here and points out a couple of interesting details. Number one, he says here at the end, Hasandik, what's going on at the Ramah here, when the Ramah says that the Sandik should drink it when he's not fasting. So the Gra says that it doesn't mean the Sandik himself, rather, whoever is the one who make, sorry, at a Lutaz Yotzim Zaval Inog, right, that on a regular day, who drinks it? So the Ramah here says the Sandik. The Gra says no, meaning the Mavarech, meaning whoever is making the bracha, he should drink the wine. You don't have to have the Sandik himself drink it. However, he quotes here, and this is not our minug, but it's an interesting idea, that he quotes from the from the Torah Chaim in Masechta Sanhedrin, that no, the Sandik himself should drink the wine. Why? Because the Nimal, the Bris, is compared to a Korban, and the Sandik is compared to the Mizbeach. And what do we do with wine? One of the and the drinking of the wine is therefore comparable to Nisuch HaYayin, to pouring the wine out. So therefore, he suggests that maybe the Ramah was alluding to a specific minhag of the Sandik himself drinking the wine. I don't know if there's any such minhag out there that anybody is choshish for, but I thought that was an interesting thing. Another thing he adds in here, I didn't think about this, is what do you do on a regular Shabbos? You also have a problem, right? We had a bris in shul on Shabbos. When does the bris take place? The bris takes place right after davening, right? And now in our shul, everybody was going to eat in the back of, right? And what has not happened yet often, right? You say Adon Olam, right? And then you bring in the child. What has not happened yet? Kiddush, right? So what, and you're not allowed to drink before Kiddush. So how is that, how is it okay to drink before Kiddush? So the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos says that the wine at a bris should be given to a katan on Shabbos. Sorry, the wine at a bris on Shabbos should be given to a katan because nobody else has made Kiddush yet. I wasn't thinking about this at the time. I don't know. I don't remember what happened, but that is the Ramah himself brings that in Shulchan Aruch, and then he quotes a couple. Then he goes through a couple of other things. Some of the details are a little bit difficult, but as you could see, as I was preparing today, my daughter Rivka found her way to the Sefer. So some of the footnotes are a little hazy. She said, "It's not." She said, "I don't have to worry about this. I'm a girl." So she went and. drew away, but he quotes a couple of other details that are relevant to various Yom Tov. Number one is it's Tzom Gedalia. Tzom Gedalia is an interesting halacha. My brother's bris was actually on Tzom Gedalia. This machlokas came to a head. Right? What is the issue on Tzom Gedalia? So the halacha is that if the bris is on a fast day, so there's no heterim for anybody to fast. However, if you're one of the three main characters of the bris, you are permitted to eat and drink on that day. So if you're the father, the moel, or the sandik, you're allowed to eat on that day. So that year, I don't know, Tzom Gedalia was a Wednesday, I think. I was 6 years old, but it was something like that. So. However, the rabbi of our shul, Rabbi Krauss, told my father that you're allowed to eat. I was like, why? It's not nidcheh. So Rabbi Krauss said, no, every Tzom Gedalia, by definition, is nidcheh. But Tzom Gedalia, when was Gedalia murdered? Gedalia was murdered on Rosh Hashanah. You can't have a fast day on Rosh Hashanah, so it's pushed off till the day after. So it's nidcheh. So therefore you're allowed to eat. So my father told the Moel about this. The Moel wouldn't hear it, but the Moel's like, no way. But it happens to be a machlokas on the page of the Mishnah Berurah. On the page of the Mishnah Berurah, that machlokas exists. I don't believe the minug is for them to eat on that day, but it's an interesting machlokas that's out there nonetheless. The minug on Yom Kippur, by the way, is to do the bris after Kriyas HaTorah before Ashrei. So there is a machlokas I noticed about if you say Aleinu or not. So I wouldn't really bring that. Our minhag is not to say Aleinu. The minhag in general is not to say Aleinu, but does bring to mind a machlokas as you know we're not in shul. So, but we have to recall ad minhagei beis hamedrash. So one of the ad minhagei beis hamedrash is that we count sfira after Aleinu, right? We do it after davening. So why are we doing it after davening? So that's the Minhag HaGra. The Minhag HaGra pointed out that we're not, that we don't bring, Sfiras Omer is not part of davening, so therefore it should be after Aleinu. It should be after davening, right? So I actually noticed on Pesach, I picked up in the Harei Kedem, so I was reading through some of the Rav's thoughts on Sfiras Omer, so he actually quotes this Machlokas, and he points out that it's a little unclear what the idea of Aleinu is. I mean, the Shitas HaGra sounds pretty simple. It says, however, the idea that Aleinu is supposed to be an end of davening is not so clear. It could be that Aleinu is actually the last thing you do in shul before leaving, right? Is it, right? So that's a machlokas. Is Aleinu the end of davening, or is it the last thing you do before leaving? What's the nafkamina? So nafkamina would be whether you would say Aleinu following Shachris on Shabbos, for example, right? So, well, Shachris is ending, and Muslims is a different filah, so maybe you should say Aleinu then. So that's not the minhag, implying that Aleinu maybe is something you do at the end of davening. So, alright, anyway, so that same machlokas might exist with regards to, we generally say Aleinu after a bris, but would you do it in the middle of davening on Yom Kippur, especially when considering that Yom Kippur, we don't say Aleinu at all, right? We don't say Aleinu after Shachris, Musaf, or Mincha. Or Ne'ilah. We don't say Ne'ilah because we're not leaving Shul at all. But I don't believe the minhag is to say Aleinu under those circumstances. To continue on, he does say here, Ba'ashri mishezoche lamul esbano esbino biyom hakodesh hazeh. How praiseworthy is a person who could give a bris to his child on this day, and v'gam l'rabbis ha'oskim, and all those that are involved. It's a very special thing to be involved with the bris on Yom Kippur. I'm not sure, like, why. Like, I don't know. I know that everybody remembers it, right? Everybody remembers that. Ask the kid who had his bris on Yom Kippur. I mean, in my shul in Phoenix, they were still talking about that 3 years early. The boy was, I think, 3-4 years old when I met there. I remember, like, the first Shabbos I was there, they told me his bris was on Yom Kippur. And it made it a little bit more, what made it a little bit more wild is that there was no Eruv at the time. In Phoenix. So the child was home, and the entire shul, in the middle of davening, left shul, walked to the kid's house, I'm sure the mother was thrilled, but everybody walked to the kid's house, had the bris, and then walked back to shul in order to daven musaf. So that makes it a little bit more memorable. And the next sif has to do with when you have two brisim on the same day, but I see already we are out of time. Whether you have two brisim in shul or whether they're twins or not twins. So both of those are debated are discussed in sif A. That obviously comes up. I was at one recently. And so I guess Amir Sashem will pick up with that next week. All right.
Question.
Yes.
You said that the three people that can eat are the bris on the fast day. So that's all the fast days except Yom Kippur?
No, only if it's nidcha, only if it's pushed off. Yeah. I think Tursky made a bris a couple of years ago. I think Marty Tursky's grandson had a bris that day. I think it was on Shavuos Arba Tammuz, that was on a Sunday, I think, if I recall correctly.
Oh, okay.
It happens.
Okay.
All right. No, I think, well, the Aruch HaShulchan says the minhag is to give it to a child, not to the child.
A child, right.
A child happens to be there. Generally, you could find them at a bris. It usually is a designated.
But no one holds that you wait till, no one follows the practice of waiting till at night.
No, nobody endorsed that, but at least I feel like I could vindicate the Bala Itter. I mean, I think I could find a pshat into what he was, why he would say what he said. But yeah, that sheet that doesn't make, as interesting as it is, it doesn't make it into Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, the wine is important to drink, but it's not necessarily birchas hanenin, right? The bracha bar piragefen at a bris or a wedding or I don't know, pinyan ben. I don't think we make a bracha bar piragefen, but those kinds of bar piragefens are not like a birchas hanenin. It's not on the wine, rather it's sort of on the mitzvah. So therefore, it's not going to be considered a bracha levatal if you don't end up drinking it.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody. Good to see you.